Good, and call the meeting in order.
And Jesse Wild in Cuyahoga, and I'm going to pass her over by the chief.
Mike Payne, Lawrence County Transit.
Kyle Thompson, ODOT District 9.
Eric Lang with CDM Smith.
Trisha Ball, Appalachian Transportation Institute and Center for Business and Economic Research.
Jody Sigmund, Iowa.
Brian Carr, Western Division of Highways.
Chris Kinsey, Western DOT UH.
Sean Ringel Smith, Federal Highways, Western Union Division.
Kelly Ward, Fox Coed.
Luke Staple, Fox Coed.
Joe Callahan, Kentucky Transportation Council.
Randy Weaver, City of Ashland.
Kira Greathouse, Charleston, NCO.
Setting solemn for Kyoto.
I'm Patrick Blair, I'm from Lawrence County. Who do we have on the phone?
Is it Thomas Whitman with Nelson Nygaard?
Matt Sellhorst, HDR.
Lindsay Walker with Kimley Horn.
Steve Bergman with the Manic Smith Group.
Okay, if that's all, we'll go ahead and go down to agenda item number two. We've all been distributed the minutes that's all put in your package for the February 20th, 2018. I'll give you a moment to review that, and we'll entertain a motion to accept whenever you're all ready.
I'll make the motion.
We have a motion to accept the minutes as distributed. And a second, we have any discussion? No discussion? All those in favor of accepting the minutes of the February 20th meeting as distributed, signify by saying aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion carries. I was hoping nobody could come up and say aye on that. Agenda item number three, the Cuyahoga Transportation Studies and Projects Update. We'll start with Tri-State Transit Expansion Plan with Thomas Whitman of Nelson Nygaard.
All right, hopefully you have a presentation up on the screen right now. You know, let me know if that's up.
Yes.
All right, great. The Transit Impact Study was, an effort that was, jointly assisted with OVA as well as TTA. And I'm going to skip through a couple of slides right here just in the interest of time. Go to slide 4. The purpose was to take a look at the strengths and weaknesses of the existing system. It's been quite a while since an in-depth look has been done of the existing services. And it's really to look at, where can we find some efficiencies, where are there places that have additional service needs, and, how do we ensure that the resources that are out there are being used in the most effective way. One of the other things we looked at was, we initially started to look at was, how to connect better the services in Kentucky and Ohio, and a couple of, service changes happened during the course of the study, that impacted that as well. Some of the things that, slide 5, some of the things that, stand out, in looking at the transit system here is that the service area is just, I'm going to call it simply difficult. The topography of the service area means that you have pockets of isolated areas of need that are either separated by hills, mountains, or hills, rivers, railroads, or freeways. So it's difficult for a transit agency to get in and out of places. One of the other big challenges is that the commercial heart of Huntington has shifted from downtown to along the US 60 corridor. And one of the other elements is that, the service design of TTA's, service, it depends on a time transfer, where service comes in and out on the hour or once an hour, and schedule adherence, or, it's simply taking longer to run service as, destinations keep on getting moved out and ridership to far-flung areas increases. It's getting harder and harder to get back to the transit center in time. So slide 6, one of the things that we looked at here is to see, you know, how can we address, you know, some of the things that we saw? How can we address on-time performance? How can we look at, you know, providing better service to that growing, you know, the US 60 corridor where, you know, a lot of the destinations within the region are right now? How do we increase service on those higher ridership routes? And, you know, how do we engage and increase the amount of utilization from Marshall as well? So those were some of the goals that we, you know, laid out, you know, slide seven, you know, so the steps that we took in order to do an assessment was to take a look at the market for transit, how well the existing service was operating, what the strengths and weaknesses were of each one of the existing routes, looking at where people rode, when they rode, and things like that. And then also we had a public engagement process that allowed us to, you know, understand what some of the priorities were for existing residents and existing riders for, you know, not only how do we improve the service, but what would it take for you to ride more often? Slide eight. I'm not sure how well you can see some of this, but it's a demographic assessment, you know, looking at the population and employee density, you know, within the area. Typically, we like to see, you know, basically the redder or the darker the color is, the more likely it is that, you know, there's, you know, ridership at those locations. Simply just, you know, density begets ridership. But this is, again, one of the clues that we had to say, you know, where's ridership, you know, where's ridership right now, or where should ridership be? You know, if all things being equal. I think one of the things that this also shows is that you know, there's little pockets of higher density, and there's long stretches where there's, you know, not that much going on from either an employment perspective or from a residential perspective. Slide nine. One of the things that, you know, we're building upon is it's really, you know, when I see growth curves like this, you know, what the ridership has been doing for, you know, the past 5 years between 2010 and 2015, like this is a really positive sign. It's not, and what it means is that the overall, that, you know, there's not something fundamentally wrong with the system when you start seeing ridership growth like this, you know, over multiple years. So it's a positive sign, and, you know, it's just something that you can build upon. Slide 10 shows, you know, in the central Huntington area where some of this is a dot map that shows the number of ons and offs at every bus stop within Huntington. The bigger the circle is, the higher the number is of people utilizing the service. And there's a couple dots in downtown around the transit center that are, you know, fairly big. But one of the biggest dot on the map is actually at Walmart on US 60. So if we were to go to slide 11, you know, we can, you know, see, you know, this is just a slightly different scale, but an extended view of this. You know, see where some of those higher ridership locations are. The Huntington Mall shows up, you know, the area where the Kmart is as well. But again, though, the Walmart on US 7 or US 60 is the one that shows up as the highest ridership point within the Huntington area for the existing service right now. You know, again, we looked at the ridership for every route, for every trip, you know, so we have an understanding of where people are riding and specifically where they are not riding as well. Then slide 12, want to briefly, you know, we had a survey, you know, that, you know, asks, you know, what are some of the priorities for improvement? Just want to touch on one of the summaries of some of the findings there. You know, the majority of respondents said they wanted to see an improvement of existing service. There was definitely a strong desire to, you know, for weekend service, more weekend service, and for the, you know, TTA does not operate on Sundays right now. So this is not just you know, can you help improve service on Saturdays, but also help us improve service, you know, give us, you know, we'd like to see service on Sunday. So that was actually one of the things we took this feedback and we did an assessment of, you know, should we be operating service on Sundays and why. Respondents also, you know, desired, you know, more frequent service. And, you know, this is also given the fact that almost every route is operating hourly, you know, that it's also easy to understand, you know, how, you know, why that might be. we looked at, slide 13, we looked at, in order to, how do we take the data that we had? I mean, the public response for priorities, what some of the market for transit is, and, what the existing ridership patterns were, and, what do we do with that? We had a couple of different guiding principles, it's like, here's things that have worked, throughout the country to say, this is some steps that we can take to build and have the framework for an excellent transit system. And some of these are service should be simple and easy to understand so that anybody could figure out how to use the service easily. Service should operate at regular intervals, like, most of your service does once an hour right now. Routes should operate along a direct path. If it takes you, 5 minutes to drive and 30 minutes on a bus, that's this type of indirect service that's going to hold you back from attracting ridership. Routes should be symmetrical, i.e., you should be able to understand, how you get out to someplace should be the same way as you get back into someplace so that people, again, you can understand how service works and somebody who has never used the service before can pick up a schedule, pick up a map and say, hey, I understand this and I can use this. Routes should serve well-defined markets. This is one of the key things in places where service has not been looked at for many, many, many years, is that in some cases, the people that you were trying to serve 10, 20, or even 30 years ago may not be there anymore, or the employer may not be there anymore. And last, but service should be well coordinated. I want to give an example of how some of the guiding principles might be applied. It's a map of the Route 6 schedule, and this is the Madison route. And one of the things you see here is deviation on the map to Department of Human Services, but overall it's a fairly straightforward route with hourly service. It's, this is a route that, it's like, okay, I think, I understand where I need to go. I think, it's easy, the schedule is easy to understand. It's an example of, some of the elements in the guiding principles. Let's go to slide 15. So from a recommendations perspective, there was, we applying the guiding principles and looking at what we could do within the existing funding. There was three different elements, three different big pushes that we felt, were things to look at. One of them was to improve the directness of service. A series of routes have these little deviations. Route 6 on the previous slide had a little deviation. But most routes have little deviations, to and from them. In some cases, it's just the pedestrian infrastructure is horrible, and it's just the only way for passengers to have a safe way to access service. But in other cases, you're making a deviation into a parking lot or into an area where you're really not picking up that many people, and you're losing a minute or two of running time, and you can't make it back in time to make connections with the other route. So looking at where those opportunities were to streamline service was one of the things we looked at here. One of the other things we looked at was how do we make service better on US 60? There's three different routes right now that serve the US 60 area route, and I'll show them on the next slide, what we looked at doing with that. But one of the things is that in essence, service is hourly, on a couple of routes out there, and then there's another route, Route 9, that operates, sort of off pulse, which means it has a sort of more random schedule associated with it. So passengers actually have to really, do I count on the hourly service or do I, look at, taking Route 9, which comes, it varies throughout the day when it comes. It's a little bit confusing for a potential, rider to understand how to get to and from. But at the same time, there's an opportunity given some of the ridership there at the Huntington Mall, the Walmart on US 60. That more frequent service is needed here. And so, it's really an opportunity. It's like, how do we reduce improve coordination on Highway 60 service and also use some of the resources that we save as a result of that to introduce service that comes every 30 minutes instead of hourly. And the difference between waiting 30 minutes for a bus or an average of 30 minutes for a bus and an average of 15 minutes per bus, is a lot. And when I say the average of 15, if you were not to have a schedule, it's simply, the difference between 30-minute service and 60-minute service is big in terms of how convenient a service is. Let's go to slide 16.
We'll have to start wrapping this up. We've got several presentations.
Okay. Just slide 16 and 17 show, what we looked at doing on Highway 60. But in essence, we looked at having 30-minute service on Highway 60 and 30-minute service on the Madison route, which is, the highest ridership route. We also looked at, what we could do with additional dollars, unfunded priorities, including adding Sunday service. And then also looked at, what capital elements, whether it's, bus stops, turnouts, or passenger amenities, we needed to add as this as well. Overall, in conclusion, TTA has provided an extraordinarily vital service to Huntington residents. These changes, would focus more resources in those areas that have shown the highest ridership and would show the highest response from, the additional investments so that even more people will ride in the future. And last, there's more need within the community than is currently being served. Additional funding is necessary in order to, meet some of the elements that customers have requested within the region. I think that concludes the presentation.
Thank you, Thomas. It was a good presentation, very informative. And
do we have any questions for
him? I just concluded. Thomas and his group, they did a great job. Actually, it was a good study and very helpful for us in the future to enhance the transit system within all of this region. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you.
We'll go on to the Lawrence County Non-Motorized Bicycle Pedestrian Plan and Truck Mobility Study with Matt Sellhorst of HDR.
Okay, thanks.
Matt, remember, you have 5 minutes.
Okay. 5 minutes. No problem. We'll get through it. All right. What I'm presenting today is the final recommendations for all the tasks that are part of this Lawrence County Non-Motorized Study. Following our stakeholder meeting in March of this year, these recommendations conclude the study that began back in January of 2017. So we can go on to the next slide then that shows Park Avenue. So first is the Park Avenue study. That's from 6th Street to westbound US 52 ramps in Ironton. This study recommended short and long-term improvements at a total cost of $1.2 million. The recommendations included the addition of left turn lanes at the intersection of 6th, 7th, and 8th Street, signal timing improvements, a new traffic signal at the intersection of Park Avenue and 8th, right in, right out at 9th Street, installing pedestrian signal heads and push buttons, Refuge Island at 7th Street intersection, replacing and providing new sidewalks, redefining some of the curb cuts, new signage, as well as a shared-use bike lane along the roadway. So the next task that we studied is the truck mobility study. So it was conducted to address issues with the relocation of the bridge back in 2016. To address some of the conflict areas, the recommended improvements are shown on the figures on the slide, and they include the restriping of 2nd Street and Jefferson Street intersection, as well as improvements to restripe, add parking and tree lawns to 2nd Street between Jefferson and Adams Street. The estimated cost of this improvements is between $75,000 and $125,000. It also includes recommendations for improvements at the 2nd Street and Park Avenue intersection. That's at a cost of $75,000 and $125,000, as well as improvements then at the 4th Street and Park Avenue intersection with an estimated cost between $150,000 and $200,000. So we can move forward then to the next slide. So the third and fourth task as part of this study was a bike and pedestrian plan for Lawrence County as well as the city of Ironton. Recommendations were developed that included biking and walking boulevards, shared use paths, side paths, bike lanes, signs, and striping. The recommendations for Lawrence County, they're shown here on the slide, and the total cost of all those recommendations is $25.6 million. If you go to the next slide, it shows the recommendations for the city of Ironton. The total cost of all those recommendations is $8.3 million within the city limits. And the study reports that are online have all the details and maps of all the recommended facilities. Then moving on to the last task of this study was the Ironton sidewalk assessment. And this activity assessed the current curb conditions of curb ramps and sidewalks in the CBD, specifically looking at ADA compliance of the curb ramps. So following the work, we collected all the data and mapping on 479 curb ramps in the downtown area. The analysis found that 70 ramps needed to be replaced due to slope issues on the curbs. 268 ramps needed to be repaired for the truncated domes. And then 5 ramps needed to be replaced just according to the poor conditions alone. So a plan to prioritize those recommended improvements for the curb ramps and sidewalks that was developed. The cost for all the sidewalk and curb ramp improvements in the study area is $1.7 million. The sidewalk improvements part of that is $875,000, and the curb ramp improvements are $842,000. So that concludes the study, and all the study reports are online on the Cuyahoga website. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Well, for the study, really, they did a great job. They did a deep analysis for the non-motorized mode and motorized mode at the same time. So I think how many reports available from this study, Matt, total, how many?
There's 5 separate reports.
5 separate reports.
Thank you, Matt. We'll go on to the next study. We have the I-64 X-Today Mixed Use Development Traffic Mobility Study. That's Lindsay Walker with Henley Hart.
Thank you. So we are still in the process of working through this study. We had a second meeting with the steering committee at the end of March, and we are working on getting the third and final one scheduled for the end of May. So if we go to the project background slide, that lists all of the tasks that we have as part of this study, and the ones highlighted in red are the ones that we have completed or in the process of completing. Tasks 3 and 4 are the ones that we are currently working on. So we are into the full part of this as far as looking at what improvements and recommendations will come out of this and go together to form the mobility plan. Tasks to date, but just a quick summary of what we have found. Looking at the existing conditions that we did a traffic analysis of this existing now and into the future to get an idea of what the operations will look like. And if we look at full-on development around the interchange, what transportation needs will there be to support that? And what we're seeing is generally the corridor operates well. Some of the intersections have congestion now and will have congestion in the future, so those might be some spot improvement areas that we would like to look at in conjunction with overall plan needs. The crash data that we were given shows typical types of collisions north and south of the interchange with rear-end collisions occurring and angle collisions. We don't have specific data to pinpoint existing locations, but we are working through the actual geometric information and looking where there might be some spot and safety improvements along the corridor. The other pieces of this is the bicycle pedestrian connectivity. We've had a lot of discussion of what the existing opportunities are connecting to Heritage Farm, Ritter Park, the Huntington Museum of Art, and trying to figure out how the PATH plan plays a role in this. And we're really working on looking at some potential off corridor trails opportunities and how all that connectivity would play out in conjunction with this plan. The last piece of it is looking at what the service boundary is for Huntington and realizing that around the interchange itself, that there's pockets that are not currently controlled by the city. And so as we move forward with this plan, that we would like the opportunity to make sure that whatever we do put in place is enforceable later on as development does occur. So that's something that could go into the policy part of this. We did a market analysis as part of this because there's a lot of recreation demand and development that we're talking about around the interchange. And we're seeing modest growth around the interchange, not a lot of dollars spent locally there, but so this is really more of a tourist draw that we're focusing on, and we're seeing increases in the recreation, the arts, the entertainment area of this. So that is a very legitimate use around the interchange and connectivity to there, and we want to play off of that. So we want to really focus our development needs more on the recreation side, realizing that we have existing lodging available in the area, and so it's not necessarily an immediate need for the recreation component of it, but it's something that could come online later as we start to get more of that demand. I mentioned that we're having the meetings coming up, that we had the second one in March. The third one is likely going to be planned for May 24th. We're still officially nailing that down. So the next slide is what we will present at that third steering committee meeting and have a public meeting forum option open to, is that we want to focus on the land use, the part of this, which is going to really be based on recreation, as I mentioned. We're not recommending having a standalone hotel at this time, that we want to utilize some of the existing lodging, but there could be the potential for combinations of the water park and hotel. Just standalone uses around the interchange don't necessarily make sense based on the data that we are seeing. And same thing with the visitors welcome center, that there's a rest stop, hospitality welcome, where you can get information very close to this existing interchange. And so what we would recommend is, instead of having an individual use, to tie it in again with one of those recreation uses. So basing that as part of our land use plans around the interchange, we look at the traffic and then what the needs are in the physical and policy side of it. And that's where our focus is right now, is those four areas that you see, the capacity, multimodal, safety, and freight, that we want to look at where we need physical improvements as far as some passing lane additions, typical sections, and we're looking at in three core areas, north of the interchange to downtown, from the interchange to Heritage Farm, where the proposed new connector could come in, and then south of that to Beach Fork Lake. The multimodal, I touched on that previously, that we're looking at some of the connectivity and plans off street, safety, we're going through the geometric data and looking at spot improvements that we can add on to what the capacity needs might be, and then looking at how the freight component of this plays a role in where we want to have traffic routed through there, making sure it's not mixing in with our recreation tourist demand traffic. And from the policy side, we want to have a consideration of the urban service boundary expansion, and then also looking at, if we're focusing this in as a tourism corridor, making some recommendations for uniformity, talking about what type of signage and plantings we would have along the corridor, guardrails, some treatments that really have an aesthetic element that tie things together. So the last slide that I have is what we're working on and our completion date. So our current work is finishing up now that we have an idea of what our land use is going to be and having the final traffic numbers, because we had looked at a very wide range of potential traffic uses there, putting the land use map together, our bicycle pedestrian connectivity, going through the corridor typical sections, and then the policy recommendations. I mentioned the next upcoming meetings, and overall our project would be completed at the end of June. So We will have a draft plan put out for the steering committee at the end of May. We'll make any changes at that point and put our documentation together in June and complete the study. That would be the end of the presentation, and any questions?
No questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next study we have is the Barbersville Milton Non-Motorized Transportation Studies with Mark Guttenblank from CDM Smith.
Good morning. Thanks very much for the opportunity to bring you guys up to date. Jody asked me to keep this to 5 minutes, so it'll be short and sweet. So next slide. With today's presentation, basically we'll provide a quick update, give you a taste of some of the comments we had at our public meetings, give you a preview of a few of the potential recommendations, and then some next steps. We had our public meetings in March 9th in Barbersville and in Milton, and we received a good number of comments in Barbersville. This slide just shows an example of some of the exhibits and the sticky notes that people put on them. The main comments we got in Barbersville were suggestions on where that the people would like to see sidewalks or bike lanes or destinations they'd like to be able to access, particularly getting to the new library from the middle and elementary school. One interesting comment that we got was that there needs to be an effort to dedicate maintenance dollars for the trail system. There's a good trail system in the parks in Barbersville, and they were afraid that it would degrade over time without proper maintenance. In Milton, we received a lot of concerns or some concerns from connecting the unincorporated areas to downtown, which is slightly beyond the realm of our study in terms of recommending actual projects, but it is something to keep in mind as the city grows and the Grand Patrician development comes into play. So we had exhibit boards showing again some of the issues that we found in our field study and the connections to Pumpkin Park. I'll talk about that in a second more. So we also displayed other existing problems as well as opportunities, particularly some of the crossings in the downtown area where there's room for improving curb ramps, etc. And this photo just shows the bridge in the Pumpkin Park area, people are walking on the unpaved shoulder, and you can see their tracks there. There's a strong need for a sidewalk or paved connection there. One of the other things that popped up was where Johns Creek Road comes in from the interstate. The one side of the intersection, or that side of the intersection, really is supporting high-speed turning movements, but completely ignores pedestrians. There's no crossings of any sort. So our recommendations will include restructuring that intersection to slow down traffic speeds and including crossing facilities. And it should be noted that all along I-60 at the intersections in Milton, there's very few crosswalks or pedestrian signals provided. and we'll provide some recommendations on how to best do that. In Barbersville, a lot of the comments and our recommendations will deal with creating bicycle pedestrian access to the Huntington Mall area. In this slide, we show how there's a vast there's a lot of space on the West Mall Bridge, and one lane really is not utilized, and there may be an opportunity to reclaim that for bicycle pedestrian access on the southbound side. Northbound side needs both lanes because there's access coming from the off-ramp from the interstate. Also in Barbersville, there was a lot of concern about connecting both the downtown and the village area directly to the new Tanyard Station development coming in with some sort of exclusive pedestrian bicycle access, and then also finding a way to improve access on State Route 60, because current plans do not include sidewalks there because of the high slopes and need for retaining walls. So that needs to be addressed as well. So going forward, this graphic shows us, I'm assuming he's been moving the slides forward. I forgot to say advance, but the final slide should say next steps. We've completed the public meetings. We're in the process of drafting our technical report, which will include those recommendations. We'll be meeting with Cuyahoga staff and staff from City of Milton and Village of Barbersville to go over some of those recommendations. We'll refine that technical report and determine the project costs for the recommended projects, and we should have a final report on June 30. If there are any questions, I'll take them now.
Any questions? No questions.
Thank you, Martin. You did a good job, and we like your end product.
Okay. Thank you very much, Lane.
We'll go ahead and jump on down to the Lawrence County US 52 interchange certification with Steve Bergman from Maddox Smith.
Yep, thanks. I assume the presentation's up. the first slide, just to introduce myself, I'm Steve Bergman. Mm-hmm. I'm the project manager for the study. The main purpose of the study was to look at grade separating the section of roadway. On slide two, if you look at the study area extends just west of Prestera Trucking Facility and ends at US 52 River Crossing in the east. So we're looking at grade separating that section of US 52. Slide three, items in our scope completed to date include traffic counts to supplement existing count information, and we'll use those going forward. We've developed the purpose, the need, and existing conditions report, which will be submitted to Cuyahoga and ODOT District 9 for approval. We've taken a subarea model, travel demand forecasting model. We've used that to project future traffic volumes, and we'll use that to test different alternatives and how that will redirect traffic through the system. ECAD analysis of the existing system has been complete. We'll also use ECAD analysis in the study of different alternatives to try to get an idea of how those improvements are going to impact safety. Congestion and safety issues with the current roadway network have been completed. We've developed conceptual alternatives. We presented that to the stakeholders group. And based on that feedback, we have developed a list of feasible alternatives moving forward that we'll study in more detail. All right, the next slide. The previous traffic and safety study for US 52 and State Route 7 was completed in 2006. It recommended grade separating 52, constructing two interchanges, including a diamond interchange between Burlington Macedonia Road and Walmart Way, and a diamond interchange at Charlie Creek Road. Now, it's important to note these interchanges assume that the local roads would go over US 52. This would allow for long runout lengths on the side roads and potentially impact the existing drives and properties along those roadways. Both of these options will be carried forward as feasible alternatives. All right, next slide. Walmart Way and Burlington Macedonia Road access. The consultant team will carry the previous recommendations forward. We also provided another option to the stakeholder group. The option would be to reconstruct and raise US 52 so that any interchanges or side roads would go under 52. And this occurs in other areas along that corridor. So we'd totally reconstruct 52, eliminate the median, which would then allow for the potential construction of collector-distributor roads within the current US 52 right-of-way. So we're trying to minimize right-of-way purchases. Move the two lanes, through lanes together, and then you're going to have room for some access roads on the side. We still propose interchanges to the same areas that were recommended previously. We've got a couple in the one alternative we're showing. We've got an interchange at Burlington Macedonia and Walmart Way, and Sandusky Road would be bridged. This alternative is going to move forward as a feasible alternative. Slide six. That's a result of our stakeholder meeting, and what we're trying to do is combine Burlington Macedonia Road interchange and Walmart Way, so there would be an interchange in between those two, and then you would make improvements to the roadway system south of the county road. This is also moving forward as a feasible, and this is very similar to the previously recommended diamond interchange. And you're seeing kind of figure eights in there. We haven't really detailed those right now for traffic flow, but there's a couple different options we're showing there. Slide seven is Charlie Creek. Each of the alternatives that we're proposing includes a Charlie Creek interchange. Again, 52 would go over in this instance. We'd have a diamond interchange. The difficulty with Charlie Creek, as you know, are the close proximity of the frontage road system on the north side, so we've got to try to incorporate those. We don't want to lose access there. Next slide is Charlie Creek access. As I talked about, it's a very challenging location for an interchange. We want to propose simple diamonds. They move traffic very efficiently and don't take a lot of right-of-way, but also we're stuck with some of the existing roadway network, a challenging geometrics on the south, a close proximity frontage road on the north. So we're going to have to be a little innovative in how we try to incorporate those into this interchange. So we've got a couple different options there we're looking at. Looks a little confusing, I know, at this point, but we are going to refine those and present those again to the stakeholder group. All right, let me go through quickly our last steps. The next steps with this is we're going to refine the long-term alternatives. Those are the alternatives I just presented. Those are longer term, more costly at the next stakeholder meeting. I have February in there, but we're actually looking at July for the next meeting. I apologize for that. We're also, in the meantime, developing a list of short and medium-term improvements. These are quick fixes. A couple options were presented by the stakeholders, so we're going to carry those forward. Like I said, stakeholder meeting number two, scheduled for July, will present short, medium, long-term feasible alternatives and measures. And Salim, we will be looking at the federal performance measures as part of our evaluation. So, and finally, we're moving to a preferred alternative and a refined design. And that's going to occur next year. So I'll be happy to answer any questions. Just want to move that through that real quick. Hopefully it wasn't too fast for everybody.
Well, known for our last study, the Huntington Tri-State Airport Multimodal Economic Impact Study with Eric Lang.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Eric Lang with CDM Smith, and I'm going to be talking to you about the economic impact study for the Tri-State Airport. Last study was done in 2006. Since that time, significant happenings have occurred. Allegiant Air started service, resulting in employment more than doubling. So the Cuyahoga Interstate Planning Commission felt it would be worthwhile to revisit this study. Some of the things that can be done with this is educate stakeholders, local decision makers, in an effort to try to convince them of the how worthwhile it is to continue to invest in infrastructure at the airport. Before I get to the findings, I want to talk to you about what exactly it is we're looking at. We use an economic impact model to tabulate the payroll, the jobs, and the output at the airport. And we do this in a number of different areas, starting with what we call the direct impacts. And that's broken down into the obvious ones, the on-airport, those are the airlines, the gift shops, rental car companies, all the stuff on the airport. We also take into account the impacts from capital improvements, that's things like runway extensions or construction of hangars that supports jobs in engineering, consulting industries. And then finally, we also look at what the visitor impacts are. These are the folks that they fly into the airport, but then they spend money at hotels, restaurants, entertainment in the area. So those are all the direct impacts. And then you got to take into account that people such as that waiter at the restaurant, they then spend their money on utility bills, mortgages, buy gasoline, things of that nature. So what our economic impact model does is take those direct impacts and it calculates how many times those dollars, those jobs recirculate within the area we're studying, in this case, the tri-state area. And we call those the multiplier impacts. You can see how those, they multiply throughout the area. And then together, the multiplier plus the direct impact, that gives you the total impact. And that's the number that we're going to be looking at here on this next slide. So for the Tri-State Airport, the airport supports 1,275 jobs with an associated payroll of close to $55 million. And the output is more than $108 million. So just to give you an idea of how that breaks down, looking just at the direct output, on airport, a little over $37 million, and the commercial service visitors, that's the spending that they do, is about $13.5 million. I want you to keep those numbers in mind as we look at the next slide, where we're going to make some comparison with other classes of airports. Now, you can see small hubs, medium hubs, large hubs. We're looking at direct jobs at these types of airports. You can see they pretty much dwarf anything on the non-hub, what is occurring at Tri-State Airport. Tri-State Airport is a non-hub airport. And that's based on the number of employments. Non-hub airports have anywhere from 10,000 to 400,000 employments. But I wanted you to see among the larger airports just how big an impact commercial service visitors have. At the large hub, it's close to two-thirds. Medium hub, it's like 75%. Even at the small hub, it's more than half. So I'm going to take away the small, medium, and large hub so we can see the details on the other airports. You can see even at the non-hub, those commercial service visitors are still having a fairly biggest impact you can see there. That's not the case at Tri-State Airport. The reason for that is that it's the nature of service at Tri-State. You've got Allegiant Airlines, which basically serves a niche market. Typical airlines will have between 30 and 50% of their employments are visitors to the area spending money. Allegiant, it's only 5%. American fits that model, but Allegiant has about two-thirds of your total employment. So while it's a great benefit to the residents of Huntington, it doesn't translate well into economic benefits as a typical airline. So keep that, like I said, it's a great benefit for the residents, but it doesn't quite translate into what we're looking at in terms of economic benefits. Well, just to put some of these results in context, I wanted to show you how it compares to the previous study, other non-hub airports, as well as Jaeger Airport, the largest airport in West Virginia. There's significant improvement in employment since 2006. You're a little bit below the average of non-hub airports, but again, like I said, it's in part due to the nature of the airline service that you find here. And then, not surprising, you're less than Jaeger. Jaeger has twice the number of employments that Huntington has. Looking at payroll and output, you can see that the payroll is above average, the non-hub average. Output lagged a little bit behind. And the reason for this is at Tri-State Airport, you've got a number of well-compensated positions, namely air traffic control and TSA. that while they provide valuable services, they don't produce an equivalent output like, say, an aircraft repair facility would. So as a result, I mean, Huntington's doing very well to have, for example, an air traffic control tower. They typically, you'll find those at airports with 50,000 or more annual operations. Huntington only has 12,000, so you guys are doing a great job having that valuable safety service in place at the airport. So one of the other things that Huntington does not have that you typically find at a non-hub airport would be an aircraft repair facility. And Brett Brown, the airport director, is actually actively working to attract such a service. So because of the nature of their business, they tend to have very high, well-paid jobs as well as correspondingly high output because they're working on very expensive aircraft. So obviously that's going to, you know, when Brent lands that, that's going to be a boon to both the area as well as the airport. So with that, that concludes the findings from our study. If you have any questions or anything, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions
for Eric? There's Mud, right?
Thank you very much. I'm going to take this opportunity to make a little commercial here. We have our donuts and our coffee in the back, so please eat up if you don't delete that to eat them.
Yeah,
we're
going
to use them next time.
This time
we'll
order
2,000.
Next time
that
we have
all the 1,000. Glad to flip. We'll go on to agenda item number 4, the air quality and quartz revocation of the ozone standard.
I think maybe Shankara or Brian, they know more about this topic more than me about the air quality. I think we heard back quartz vacates the revocation of the ozone standard. And what I heard really from the still the U.S. EPA and the process to make the decision if they are going along with that application or not. They said that April 16, but nothing happened. I'm not sure, Chandra, if you have any of these.
We're still waiting on guidance from headquarters. In fact, I got notice that there's a call, like, now. So I don't know what might be happening at that. So other than I don't have guidance on what's happening yet. So.
Yeah, just simply the people here or the member of the tech, this is an important decision. For example, currently, emission analysis is no longer required for the transition performance for ozone and for 2.5. And if something happens, that means that will be a big need actually for our area. And hopefully, the court decides not to vacate the location.
Yeah, it'd be the revocation of the revocation, basically. So the good news is that you have kept up with your regular IAC stuff that, you know what I mean, you've continued to submit projects out for consideration for air quality. And you know, like Laura Toole and I were talking that, you know, we feel confident that if for some reason this revocation of the revocation happens, that we would be able to get the transportation conformity issued out fairly quickly because you've already been keeping up everything as it stands. You didn't let anything slide. You just kind of kept on. So
we have the next step update, the next fiscal year for the fiscal 2023, that means that it will extend the tip process.
But I'll let you know when I know.
Yep.
We'll go on to agenda item number 5, which is amendment number 5 for the Tioga fiscal year 2018-21 TIP.
I think if we have, if you look at your package, we have the amendment number 5. Basically, we received the 3 requests from Virginia Department of Highway. The site state transit authority and action for system to amend the TIP. If you look here, basically, addition with the general obligation bond. So, bond, Howard Washington County, the 29th Street to Bangor. basically that's the for engineering about the four phases. Also, consistent of the widening of ICC4 from four lanes to six lanes, including bridge replacement. That basically the total project is close to 3.1 miles along the ICC4 corridor. For if you go for the transit project, there is a request changes. Basically, the CTA has requested for all the FY 2016 to FY 2017 and which one of section 5310 into the year of FY 2018. And these additions are highlighted as you see in yellow on the CTA project sheet under section 5310. For the Ashland bus system, I think that is here. Ashland bus system has reported to versus my fault. Like two cutaway bus using Section 5307 funding from Kentucky Public Transit Authority, KISTA, FY 2018. Also, Mid South bus has a contract with the option around 100,000. Do you want to elaborate anything, Randy, on this Ashland bus system?
Yeah, I think that covers it. The number was a little bit higher because they didn't have the 18 CASI process.
And again, we are lucky in the no longer required for the time being. We went through the 15 days public review began with April 4th through the April 18th. And with the process of process of intelligence consultation, no comments. And we need to amend this. We need a motion.
So we'll entertain any motions to move this forward onto the policy. We have a motion. We have a second.
I'm second.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Go on to number six, the work plan.
And this is really happening. I think this is the work program, the annual document. This is unified planning work program for FY19. If you look at the, usually, if you go to the abstract, I think this is an annual document for your reviews. And basically, just to make things for you easy, if you go to the table of contents, you will look for the page 14. We have the summary of the FY 19 steps, and also the first act planning elements have been addressed. And basically, if you look at the and this document is showing you the work elements there under section 2. And also we have section 3, the budget. Actually, the first draft on the review back in the February meeting, we received comments from Federal Highway Administration and Ohio Divisions and some comments from West Virginia and comments from Kentucky. And we addressed these comments. We're going to submit this final draft through an Ohio report, also in West Virginia report, and in Kentucky through Friday. If you look at this document, basically we have the general of the study, general planning items, and that's the document. You can browse it. Again, if you like to read, you go to page 14, 15, and summarize most of the topics that really put them in. It's ranged from management administration, short range and depth, long range transition plans, modeling, air quality conformity, public participation, SDVG. On the human service planning, section 53, joint coordination, studies. We have multiple studies in the program. the document, and again, we took the first draft to use back at the Now, this is, we call this a spinal draft, actually. It's the name, not spinal draft. And we need an action.
So, this action required on this, too. So, do we have a motion to move the fiscal year 2019 final draft for the UCWP board to the policy board? We have a motion. We have a second. And we have a second. Do we have any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion carried. Agenda item number 7, the transit system status update for the Huntington urbanized area.
Before, I think, since nobody here from TTA, basically, I think there is final review date set by FTA, July 16 and 17, and we will see what then help them in this review. And also, we have some news. There's a ribbon cutting tomorrow, right, Bethany? Tomorrow, so April 25th. Actually, I think TTA, they're building 4 brand new buses. And this, the funding of the source came from the Cuyahoga FTDG sub-allocated fund, which leaves that money to FTA, and now these 4 brand new buses come from Cuyahoga sub-allocated fund initially. And tomorrow we're going to celebrate the government's point. Basically, come from the highway. Thank you. If you want to be there, that's 9 o'clock. That's tomorrow at Pullman Square. Chandra is one. Tomorrow is a ribbon cutting for the public authority. They're getting 4 grand new buses from Cuyahoga sub allocated funds that we lift that fund back in 3 years ago.
No, I mean 9 a.m.
If you can make it, because you give them a much better support. Of tomorrow, I think the transit actually, we have also we completed for some of the transit impact study and the new buses. And I think the future is so bright.
Yeah. Is that one of the new buses they posted about on Facebook the other day?
I'm not really. I'm very inactive on Facebook.
Orange County Trail?
Mike, thank you. Not much, just preparing for the triennial. I think those buses these days are very advanced buses in terms of green. And they put an article in the paper about it. It's a pretty big deal for signing.
It's a green mean like natural gas.
I read the article. I haven't talked to Paul about it, but I think so. I think they're pretty excited about it. It's new technology on buses, very expensive buses.
By force, but I think one of the comments came through certification of the view. I think the recommendation that we have to do this, there is a shadow of the responsibility and you work up what you are doing. And basically, that umbrella MOU and went through really a long process. I don't know how long it takes, 2 years to be finalized. Went through four more.
No, we just started this past fall.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It feels like 2 years, but we only started this past
well,
fall.
Well, the PMA certification is fast.
Yeah.
The fast way.
Yeah.
So it feels like it's
years. I think then maybe it took a year, but now it's final, and we're going to introduce this to our board to be signed. Then after that, hopefully, we'll get all the signature. Right. Okay. If you look here, that's the MOU, and it show you that basically show the attachment for the existing MOU we have or MOUs and boundaries and understanding. That's what we need. If you want to take a look, because you see something before we, but it was a really extensive review process.
When's the next TAC meeting?
The next TAC meeting will be on September.
Oh, September.
Tomorrow, and then after that,
So Transit's signing it tomorrow?
They may have already.
Okay.
But the walk was going to
give it on. Yay!
That's the first one. And the one for with Ohio agreement, I think, might be signed, right? And we received a minor comment this morning, actually. We need to make 5 modifications to the agreement. But all that, so that we can go along, or we can take this modification. We're going to wait our options. But generally, we're going to go along with the public. Easy, since the deadline
is May 27th. For the signing agreement.
Before May
27th. Whatever. One of them's 20th, one's 27th. I can't keep them straight anymore.
The third one was Kentucky Cabinet, that agreement. We're going to sign this one. I think Thomas, he was looking for.
They're not with CMAQ yet. So because they've been working on their TAMP, they've been working on doing their targets and things as well. They've been working really hard. So they have some of those draft proposed numbers. And then next Tuesday, I think it's next Tuesday, there's a stakeholder meeting. I think it's Tuesday. I can have my dates.
Monday.
Is it Monday? Monday. Too many dates. Okay, so Monday is a meeting, stakeholder meeting, where I believe that's where they want to, like, start discussing everything with the various MPOs and everything like that as to what they're thinking about setting and what their goals are. So, you know, depending on that, it could be very shortly that the MPOs are getting, you know, what the state's targets are for consideration and acceptance and things like that. So it's moving along quite well, actually. I'm very, very happy about how well they're dealing with everything. So I don't see that we're going to have any issues in the state with meeting any of the performance measures as far as setting targets and things like that.
Yes, just to recap what Chandra said, the stakeholder conversation, the system performance-based and profit, we have PM 1, 2, and 3.
And transit.
We missed one back in the brewery. The deadline was February 27th. We missed that deadline. And what we did here for the safety, Kiowa decided to support the safety of the target. We're going to support the target. For the two and three deadline, November 16th, and we're going to do the same, give the allowance. We're going to do the same approach to support the three safety of the target for the pavement bridge position. For the two and for the three, for the system performance, the freight congestion, but for the air quality before locally, before the period two, that we will have to comply with that in 2021. We will go direct to the director. For the director, our right hand of this process. Without them, we can do it. And we're going to have everything on the process. That's what really, hopefully, with the help of the safety OT, help of the reg, we try to meet OT, so it's number one. For Chandra, our backbone.
Okay. No action. Oh, go to agenda item number
No, yes it is. They're working on the elevator. It's moving along. I haven't been out there, but Fred was maybe going to send me some pictures, but yeah, it's moving along.
Do you know when some of them will be open?
I haven't heard about when it's going to be open. I know they had, what was it, like 200 and, I don't know, days to complete it.
They told us next spring or maybe do it that in April.
Yeah.
By September. It's very convenient. So we're now Microsoft, take a look at the television.
Keep dragging your luggage up the stairs. The City of Huntington project.
Nothing big to report on. Just kind of working through some contracts with consultants for different sections of the path and brainstorming some of our maintenance issues that we have to work on and for something fun. If you're interested, our annual Tour de Path ride, which is a fun ride that we do, showing off sections of the path system, is May 19th at 10 a.m. in partnership with Huntington Sustainability Fair. We'll be taking off from the gazebo in Huntington. So, you know, anybody who wants to ride around.
West Virginia Department of Transportation statewide grid study plan update.
You like that for?
Because my email.
Follow me because we're right now addressing FHWA's comments. So that's kind of where we stand. I was told we got to address those. We're hoping to take those out here very soon. Next couple of months, we'll get all this finalized and taken care of. So that's all I really have on that.
Okay, the Roads to Prosperity Highway Program update.
Well, so far, how do you like it?
So far, we like it.
I mean, I've heard some horror stories already on I-64 where it's taking people a couple hours to get through there. So,
that's a good problem to have, you know.
Not everybody thinks so, but yes, you're right. You think it's a good problem to have unless you're sitting in that traffic. Yeah, obviously, you know, things are moving along right now, and it's going to continue. There's going to be more construction projects pop up, you know, all summer long. I heard there's going to be another public meeting on, not necessarily here, but like say it's on I-77 there between Princeton and Bluefield. They're going to be having another major project just potentially working on out here on I-64. So if you're planning on heading to Myrtle Beach this summer, expect another major slowdown right before you get to the tunnel if you're going down 77. So, this project's going to be popping up all over the place. I know some people are. You hear from the general public, they're frustrated with even the side roads and back roads and whatnot, you know, potholes and stuff like that. Again, all the asphalt plants really just opened up in the last couple of weeks, and even there, when you're still seeing snow flying around, it's not exactly the ideal conditions to go out through pavement. So we're moving forward with as much as we can, getting the contractors out and working. So, come this September, when we have this conversation again, you know, we'll see where we stand and how frustrated everybody is with all the new ones coming in. But until then, everybody, like they said, just allow yourself some extra time in some of these places. Get busy.
And for the group, really, kind of, we got the money, share of the road bonds from Gavin Wayne County. So far, 4 major projects advanced through this program. The first project, U.S. City Design Build, for $150 million. That's great news for Wayne County. Second project, Cabin County, Culloden Interchange, $50 million. Improvement of the connector between I-64, US-60 roundabout, major design plan. US-60 improvement, that's a dream project that is for us. From intersection 193, US-60 to the mall. That's a major project. And the biggest, the I-64 improvement. That's some of the section to 8 lanes, some of the section 6 lanes, bridges upgrade, that's really great. And also major resurfacing job that's from Cemento to Hurricane.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, everybody's got to understand that all these projects aren't
on bond projects, per se. They're all part of the road prosperity program. You know, as if you've heard the secretary.
What's the fund?
Well, you've got Garvey funds. You got they haven't the actual bonds. I think our first set of bonds is supposed to let out. I want to say next month. But if I'm not mistaken, the I-64 project and most of these others that are currently being structured as we speak, I believe those are all issues to Garvey bonds. Okay. Some projects have been. If you've heard of the Secretary Smith's speeches that he's done, you know, while we're out promoting, you know, before the vote and even afterwards, that, you know, we've been letting projects out in various waves. You probably have seen wave A, B, C, D, and everything. There's different pots of money that, you know, when the different bonds and everything come up, you know, whether it's the Garvey bonds. You know, again, back on July 1, when we first started getting money from the DMV fees, we didn't have a mechanism, per se, to get, you know, projects out, but those fees were still coming in. And at the beginning, we really didn't have a whole lot of money to work with. But over the course of the last, what is it now, 9 months, you know, we've garnered a significant amount of money from those DMV fees, which ultimately is going to be used to pay the bond. But until such time, a lot of that money is now going into some of these other projects. So, you know, we've got Garvey bonds, we've got the DMV fees that come out, we've got a regular federal highway program, we've got the bonds that right now is going to be let out basically right now, as I understand, like in four waves. We've got 2018 supposed to be coming out here in May. So you know, there's just going to be a wave. They like to use some waves. You know, we're going to be letting out projects in waves depending upon, you know, what type of funds and everything are coming up. And like I say, the next major batch is going to be the actual general obligation bonds. And I think they're supposed to be letting out sometime here in May. I think turnpike bonds, I know there was a little hiccup we were trying to get through. They were supposed to let some out in April, but that didn't happen. But as far as from what I've understood, we were going to let a bunch of those go in June, I think it was. Now, granted, this area doesn't really, not going to receive the turnpike bonds. That's down I-77 Beckley Way with all the connecting counties and stuff in that area. But, again, statewide, there's just going to be projects everywhere. So I highly advise everybody, if you are traveling throughout the state, you know, probably here for the next couple of years, get on the 511 site and see where all the construction is happening. Because you might want to kind of get some idea what kind of holdup you might be. If I may go ahead and add on something else at this time, and I think my bosses, they forwarded out to the MCOs what was once called the Tiger Grant. Basically, it's the same exact thing, except it's got a new name.
What's the new name?
Bill, B-U-I-L-D. I can't tell you what it stands for. I just read it once yesterday. You know, it's just another acronym, but it's basically to replace Tiger. It's pretty much the criteria, everything's the same, but what I understand at this point, last year, I think, with the Tiger grants, they were led nationally, it was $500 million. This year, I think it's $1.5
billion.
So they tripled the amount of money that's going to be in this grant program. This is what's replacing Tiger. That's a whole different thing. Okay, this is strictly what's replacing Tiger. The criteria is pretty much essentially the same. I understand they're going to be putting a little more emphasis on in rural areas. I believe the maximum amount any project can receive is $25 million. The maximum amount any state can receive is $150 million. So, you know, now it's time to start thinking about what projects that if the MPO was looking at submitting an application to start thinking about
what
was.
What's the match requirement, 70-80-20?
Yes, the same as it was for Tiger. Let's see here, what else? I think the due date on this, I believe, was July 19th. And I'm sure a lot more information is going to be forthcoming. Like I said, Chris and I just received this information yesterday. The only other criteria.
Only for outside the urban area, right? That's ground holding in the rural area or just for the for any area?
It's for any area, but I think they're going to be, you know, they're looking at trying to give more points, if you will, for projects in rural areas. Which, by and large, I think West Virginia as a whole kind of qualifies to that. But the only other criteria that I know right now that we for West Virginia, if any project has any bond money attached to it for FY18, what's coming out, will not be eligible. Okay, because I think the way a bond structure is set up, when you go sell the bonds to market, you've already identified your funding sources. Then if you go out and you recruit, or you receive another $25 million, say, for this build grant, it somehow affects the bonds that you just sold, because it just changes it, and then all of a sudden your bonds are disqualified or something like that. So pretty much any of the FY18 GO bonds projects would not be eligible. So by and large, most projects, if I'm to understand at this point, that's ever been submitted in the past are probably not going to be able to be submitted, you know, for this particular round. So, you know, start thinking about, you know, what projects in your area that you might be thinking is worthwhile to pursue, because, again, if you're not able to use a project in the past, you're going to be starting all over from scratch, getting all your information and everything. So July 19th will be here before you know it. So I'm sure internally our office is going to be looking at things. When the GoBond projects get let in May, I'm sure there's going to be a large list, and we'll probably wind up scratching off all some of the projects off our list that wind up going in as well. So now's the time to be thinking about those kind of projects, what kind of information you need to fill out those applications. So I wanted to throw that out there while I was talking about the roads to prosperity, because I think it all kind of ties in together.
Thank you. Good information. Thank you.
We have Kentucky Transportation Cabinet Central Office update.
Well, Thomas isn't here yet to complete this appointment, but I think what he would talk about is the fact that we do finally have an enacted 2018 highway plan. And of course, there's a highway plan, a 6-year plan. And it's contains $8.5 billion worth of projects, and there was a pretty good focus this time around on bridge projects, improving bridges. And we've allocated over $1 billion for bridge projects. And you'll see that too when I go over the project update sheets for the bridge counties. But the SHIP process that we used to identify the projects that needed to go into the highway plan, by all accounts, or by most accounts, it was a successful process, and I think it's going to be tweaked a little bit, but I think this is a process that we'll be using in highway plans for many times. And we've already began our 2020 highway plan process. So, but we do have a plan, so we're anxious to get started on some of the projects. And if you look in your packet, that there is a project update sheet that Jody was kind enough to print out this morning for you. I apologize for getting that to you. It's a short notice. But it's two-sided project update sheet. One side is Foley County, and that's where I'll start. The first project is 9-8400. That's a project from Holton to Cannonsburg on that US 60. We are still progressing to January 2019 letting. So we'll have a little bit of right-of-way work to do and some utility work there, too. But we are trying to hold that January 2019 meeting, so hopefully this time next year we'll see there being movement there. The third project, 9-8801, that's a turn lane project on US 23 in Catlettsburg at 12th Street. The project has been let, and we're just waiting on the weather to break. I don't think they've done any work out there yet. As soon as the weather breaks, you'll see that we're looking for a mid-summer completion date. The next four projects are bridge projects in Boyd County. The first one is 12th Street Bridge. That's going to be a major traffic impact. We're scheduled for a June letting, and that's going to close the bridge for an overlay, and also the sidewalk on the downstream side of the bridge will also be closed. but we are stipulating a November 15th completion date, in which we will be diverting traffic off that bridge onto the 13th Street Bridge, so we'll have two-way traffic on the 13th Street. Similar to what we did a few years ago when we had damage on the 12th Street Bridge. Now there's 2015, that's painting on the Catlinsburg Culver Bridge on US 60 over the Ohio River, but that's actually on the Big Sandy there. That is a new project, and it's primarily just weed painting. Hopefully starting that soon. I don't think I have a scheduled date for that. The Perry Gentry Bridges on I-64 at the state line. These are West Virginia DOT bridges, but it's their financial contribution to that. I understand that there's overlays and take repairs to West Virginia's lead agency on that. And 9-10018, that's a bridge on Kentucky 84, Boyd County, or 854 in Boyd County over Garner Creek project as well. Started on that project soon. You can flip over Greenham County, 9-1073, that's the Russell Viaduct Bridge project. We're still working on it right away, but we had to move the letting to July of this year, but we are trying to hold that date and have everything done and ready to go for that. 9-1094, that's a bridge on Williams Avenue. Before, that funding was in the out years, but now it's been moved to the biennium, so we will be doing some work on that. And also, on these project sheets, or on this project sheet here, the funding sources and the schedules are to reflect in the plan. 9-8509, that's a 2207 Blackwood up to the Industrial Parkway. We are working toward the completion of environmental documents there, but we don't have any more design money for 2024. Sometime before we actually get going on that. 9-132, that's the reconstruction of Kentucky 2. Again, the money's in the out years. So we may do some, we do have a little bit of design money. We may work on a little bit more design work in the interfaces to get funding. And then that last four projects are bridge projects, two county bridges and two state bridges. So, and one project that's not showing up on here is Carter County project. So that's where the project begins, but it's Industrial Parkway. In anticipation of Brady Industries and also other industry developing there, we're looking at ways to improve safety and to increase capacity of that roadway there. That may include a small four-lane section from 64 to Industrial Park. With that, that's pretty much all I have.
Lawrence County Projects Update. We've been talking about a couple of flood projects. The County Road 1 is the 5.35 mile marker. That is completed this time, and we're just getting ready to submit the flood out to ODOT. We also had County Road 4 and the 4.75 mile mark. We're about halfway done with that flood repair. Contractors moving along on that. The PIP 97484, that's the Solver Route roundabout. We have that stage one plan submitted last week, and we've forwarded those on to ODOT for concurrence. That project is to be completed by December 31st of 18. So it'll be the first roundabout within the Cuyahoga area. So, it'll be either a great day or a week away. We'll figure it out. The US 52 State Route 243 justification study for feasibility study. This is a project the Lawrence County Transportation Improvement District is doing. What we looked at was a no-build scenario and a scenario for signalization, and then a scenario for wrapping up two ramps on the State Route 243 interchange. And at the time that we had the original stakeholders meeting, the project came back that traffic signals were not warranted. So the roundabout design had gone forward, or not designed, but
the feasibility part of the roundabouts. At that time, central office has come back and they kind of loosened some of the requirements on the warrants of traffic signals. So they are going to be warranted. So we have a project that could possibly cost about a third of the money. So that's a good thing. And so we are in the final process of that feasibility study. And hopefully by summer, we would be able to have a project that's ready to go forward on the design building process. Other than that, I think that's awesome. Update on Ironton Riverfront Trail, another project that's route right here. I know that they were working with the city.
Yeah, they he's just waiting on the ODNR renewal grants right now.
But we need to make sure all these requirements need to meet before June 30th. I think something else is pushing all these permits.
And the ODOT update with access to Ohio 2045.
Nothing too crazy to update on. A few resurfacing projects coming up here within this next year, including the State Route 93 within Ironton. As I'm sure you're all aware, we had the Rockfall project here last month, and it's wrapped up. And outside of that, I think it's about it. Maintenance projects, and yeah, I think that's about it. Then Access Ohio 2045. I guess ODOT is updating their long-range transportation plan, and it is scheduled to be.
I think if you look at the new handout,
yeah, the handout. It doesn't matter. Yeah, we'll just stick with the handout. No, we're updating our long-range transportation plan. To just update the current trends, where we see ODOT heading in the future, and to address new federal requirements. It looks like it will be complete July of 2019, and there are a few workshops coming up if anybody is interested. Probably being this area, May 10th at Buckeye Hills, Marietta, or May 16th,
at 14. I
have a question for you.
I'll try to answer. What is the bypass?
Yes. It is scheduled to open up in December of 2018, as far as I know. I haven't heard otherwise, but I don't know too much on that project.
Yeah, I know there's a meeting that's going on right now that has like the ARC and Federal Highways and DOT. I don't know what they're discussing. They just
yeah,
happening.
I've heard rumors, you know, with the 115 that they got to try to quicker or maybe third quarter.
It wouldn't surprise me. I know they're making a lot of progress.
Yes, they are.
It does show people knowledge here. That will shorten the trip to Columbus, Ohio by 30 minutes. That's what the focus is by that. Maybe 30 minutes is not a big deal for cars, but a big deal for trucks. That's the way we'll see it. I mean, for the trucks, and they expect to be a lot of trucks to come to the east from Columbus.
We'll go on to agenda item number 12, the 5310 transit program. Bethany, do you want to discuss that?
Yeah, I'll say so the round 4 applications have been, they've all been submitted, and TTS submitted the grant to FTA, so I assume they're just waiting on approval, and then they'll purchase the vehicles. Like it says, we purchased some cutaway buses and
there's a contract of services application for TPA to do the service for CISO. And then the coordinated plan will be updated, and the West Virginia Division of Public Transit has been very gracious to include the TMA in their updated plan. I think that they maybe put out an RFP already for that project, but since the 5310 money actually comes to West Virginia, they agreed to include that in their part. So we'll have a standalone document so we can still update it. We'll probably just have to help with the public participation part and you know, getting the right agencies involved and everything. But the majority of the work, or consultants will, when they hire them. So we'll hopefully we're going to have another round of 5310 funding coming out sometime this spring. We have to work out the dates with CPA. But yeah, we kind of updated the application a little bit so it's a little more streamlined. It's a little bit easier to understand. So if you know of anybody who is interested in doing that, I mean, come to us and let us know, because they have to be included in the coordinated plan in order to receive 5310 funding. Any questions?
And actually, no, all 5310 is not limited to the vehicle. We can also do contract with services, reimburse you for operation.
Agenda item number 14, other business, payroll update.
Just everything on my plate.
Well, we have on here, we have a list of upcoming dates. We have the policy board meets this Friday. And then our next meeting is the TAC is September the 18th. And that date had changed from the original. So.
Just some of the ad school for the conferences coming in Ohio. Ohio Planning Conference is July 16 and 17. And the Ohio State Conference in July also for August.
Frank
Conference
is in August.
In August. Two good conferences, really. Planning conference. And Ohio, if you would like to, and you would be in a like to come to this conference, it's a good conference. That's in Columbus, Ohio. It's in the early bird registration available. It's a conference. And the state conference was a great conference. It's covered basically Ohio.
Also at 12:15, don't forget the meeting with the Memorandum of Understanding, and also keep it on us.
Yes.
We have a meeting.
Do they have any further business? We'll adjourn.
I kept trying to find that article.
You need to, if you can.
Yeah.
That's probably great.
Okay.
That's why I'm looking at it.